Switch gears from simply talking about the work and its concepts of being asleep or awake from a psychological point of view, and switch a little more to the Bible. The Bible deals with the principle of mankind being asleep as much as the work would on any other level. So let's begin with Jeremiah. Jeremiah states, "Do not listen to the words of the prophet who prophesy to you, filling you with vain hopes. They speak of visions of their own minds, not from the mouth of the Lord. They say continually to those who despise the word of the Lord, 'It shall be well with you.' And to everyone who stubbornly follows their own heart, they say, 'No evil shall come upon you.'" This quote sums up, I think, probably about four or five essential work principles concerning consciousness at all. First of all, you remember how I said last time, if you want to know higher and lower, lower is always easier? Well, Jeremiah points out that one of the ways that you can tell a false prophet is that a false prophet will tell you anything you want to hear. I very frequently feel sorry for the work in that I think like it's just simply up against it. If the human being as a race of beings on this planet has the capacity to convince itself of anything that it wants, and it can convince itself that it's a good human being, a right human being, that what it says and does are perfectly appropriate behavior, and you know, there is no real good, and there's certainly no up, you know, that they're in present time and they're dealing with their life the best way they know how, you've got a human being that's basically fairly self-satisfied. The problem is, from a work point of view, that self-satisfaction is basically an illusion, because the work says, no, 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 you're sound asleep. You're a mass of habits. You're playing a part in a script. The scripts are limited, believe it or not. Life is a school. There are lessons for you to learn. And one of which is that, you know, you're not the center of the universe. You're not right all the time. You don't necessarily know what you're doing. And nobody wants to hear that. Everyone wants to believe that it really doesn't matter what they say or do, that there's no record being kept, or there's simply nothing that's going to happen as a consequence of their own behavior. Secondly, he points out, he says, and to people who stubbornly follow their own heart, that no evil shall come upon you. I think people sometimes don't get a profound principle. It doesn't really matter if God exists on one level or not. To some extent, he's a good idea in that he's higher, more powerful, more intelligent, has a greater level of being than we do. He has these attributes. If we relate ourselves to something better than ourselves, you know, we can only benefit. The other thing is that people are always wondering why God doesn't act now. You know, why isn't God doing anything now? And I think that one of the things that I've discovered over the years is that there's really no need for God to do anything. By that I mean that he's already created a system of checks and balances that works absolutely. And it works just as well psychologically as it does physiologically. And he really doesn't have to do anything. You know, you don't need a God to punish you. That Old Testament God, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to make your life miserable. From a work point of view, if you don't do what the higher would have you do, your life is going to be miserable. I mean, the higher wants to give you life more abundantly, as Jesus once said. It simply wants to give you a better life, or certainly a better enjoyment of the life you have. If you refuse to do that, which is clearly your own right, well, then you're sort of cutting yourself off from a great deal of good, and you would just simply be unhappy anyway. So when he says, you know, no evil shall come upon you, you don't need any evil to come upon you in that the punishment, the consequence, the suffering, if you will, from mistakes and wrong choices are contained in the mistakes and wrong choices. If you see yourself as life is on a journey, let's say, and you have to get from the East Coast to the West Coast, and you simply start to walk in that direction, if you make a mistake and you make a right-hand turn that you shouldn't have, at some point you're going to realize it, God willing. You turn around and you go back. I mean, it's easy. If you have a goal, you'll know if you miss it or not. You know, if you make a left-hand turn that turns out to be a dead-end street, well, that's okay. At some point you're going to realize it, turn around, get back on the path. I think that's sort of like the way the work looks at it. So if anybody makes a mistake, if they turn to the right or turn to the left or fall asleep or do something wrong, nothing has to happen in addition. The mistake in and of itself brings its own consequences. But what Jeremiah is pointing out is that it's very pleasing to people. You know, you can get people to believe just about anything, especially if you're willing to feed their vanity. And anybody who believes that spiritual development is easy simply doesn't understand what it's about. It takes everything you've got. My position is there's plenty of valid ways out. There's plenty of valid work ways out. There isn't just one way to teach this work. But whatever the way out is going to be, it's going to be a path of effort and trials, you know, tests, skills that need to be acquired, attributes that need to be sacrificed. It isn't going to be easy. And humanity would be wise to start realizing that people who constantly pander to your sense of sloth, and this is going to be easy, and you don't really have to work on yourself. All you have to do is realize you're a child of God, and you're there. From a war point of view, it's just like, you've got to wake up to that. I mean, that's just an illusion, and your own common sense should somehow reveal that to you, but it so rarely does. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament define false prophets who say anything everybody wants to hear. I don't think the work says anything anybody wants to hear. I think it's probably one of the reasons it's valid. It really does say you're the problem and therefore you're the solution. And the problem you are is that you simply do not know yourself. You're not in control of your life. Anything can and does happen to you. You respond in 101 knee-jerk reactions, most of which are totally self-defeating, and you couldn't find your way out of a paper bag, much less live your life consciously at this point. Nothing higher, including God or Jesus Christ himself, had anything to say that could ever make somebody feel good about themselves as they were. One of the reasons that Jesus got crucified is because he told it like it is. And he was able to call people's games. He was very good at spotting the egotism and vanity in the religious sects, you know, the sections of life that deal with religion, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the like. And he was always pointing out, you know, you do everything to be seen of men. You know, you have all these rituals and all these parades and all these ways of being in this world so that you can look good and feel good to yourself and get everybody else, you know, in the community to admire you. But from my point of view, i.e. Jesus, you know, just to live your life that way invalidates you as a human being. And after a while, it just seems to me there wasn't enough room in this world for the hypocrites and the liars and Jesus. Because Jesus could call it very, very well. He certainly never said anything to anybody they wanted to hear. In the book of Revelation, I was surprised when I finally realized the truth of this is that, first of all, it's not God that judges the creation, it's Jesus. And second of all, that when Jesus comes back within the confines of that, the book of Revelation, he goes to the churches. He goes to the seven churches, which is an occult number anyway. And he says, by the way, you know how you basically think you're good? Well, here's a problem I have with what you're doing. And in this case, when he says, I have a controversy with thee, he's actually mirroring something that Jeremiah did in the Old Testament. Jeremiah would also, whether speaking for Yahweh or from himself, he would look at the current way of being in this world and saying, well, you say it's fine, but I say it's a problem. And this is exactly what Jesus does in the end. He comes back and he says, you think that, you know, you're doing everything right, but I'm spotting some hypocrisy. I'm spotting some sloth, I'm spotting whatever. Secondly, when Jesus comes back, people don't quite get it. You know, he doesn't feel sorry for anybody. He's not forgiving 70 times 7. He's looking at humanity and saying, you know something, I've been there. I was one of you, that's A. Two, I've been watching you. I've been watching the way this world has gone and the ups and downs of the various, you know, civilizations and all the rest of it. And I've come to a conclusion. which is probably very few of you have what it takes to go on to be saved, to spiritually develop on any level. And the rest of